The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The latest trends and hottest topics, love and sex, handled honestly and with passion. Here's Dr. Lori, CJAD 800.
Do you know the difference between role-playing and a lifestyle of BDSM? Well, you'll find out tonight. It is our alternative sexuality night. It's all about the different ways that people express their passion for sex. It's a regular feature the first Wednesday of every night. And I've got a panel of experts in studio with me. We've got Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com. We have Dane Stewart, who manages Montreal's local pup group, Woof MTL, organizes events for human pups, which is very much related to BDSM. You also organize a BDSM play nights in a dungeon and all kinds of stuff. So if you've got questions about alternative sexuality, any form of alternative sexuality, you can certainly ask them here tonight. 514-800, or you can call in at 514-790-0800. Right off the top, we did get a question. I said I would reserve it for tonight. Talking about a flogging post, something that are often done apparently at kink nights. Can you talk about what a flogging... You may have to explain flogging and the post. Who wants to go first?
Well, I will.
Okay.
Hi, Doctor.
Ladies first.
Thanks for having me on.
Ladies first, yes.
There's quite a few different what we call equipment for BDSM that could be used to help with flogging. You could have something called a spanking bench, which is kind of like a low table that the sub would lean over.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on where you're flogging on. And flogging, by the way, is... like a whip with many tails. It almost looks like a mop, usually.
Mm-hmm.
when
a long mop.
Yeah, they're talking about flogging. You can have a post, which is looks like a post, and it has places on it, usually hooks that you can shackle the sub to.
So restraint.
There's something called a St. Andrew's cross, which looks like a big X, usually made out of wood. That again, the sub can be attached to for flogging. There's something called a Catherine's wheel, which actually is like a big circle that will turn around that, you know, people will typically see on TV with dungeons and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you have to be able to strap the sub in pretty firm.
All four corners,
but
right?
You know, you can just lean over a table or put your hands on, hold your ankles and things like that. So it's definitely not
a necessity
for it. But you know, it can help with the ambiance. Sometimes it's really exciting for a submissive to be put to a post or something. It kind of gets them in the mood.
And I'm curious from Dane, who organizes it in dungeons, organizes play parties. What's that about?
Well, I mean, we have most of the equipment that that was mentioned here.
Exactly.
We've got a spanking bench. We've got a St. Andrew's cross there. And there is a lot of flogging that happens at our events. Flogging, for people who haven't experienced it before, I sort of classify it as a form of impact play. So you're getting this physical contact on another person's body. It can look really scary because it does resemble sort of whipping.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's so many
tails.
Sort of tails attached to this... to the handle, it spreads out the impact, it spreads out the surface area, and so the pain isn't that intense unless a person is really going quite hard with it. And so because of that, you can get anywhere from like a feeling of just being massaged lightly to really almost being punched, but you'll usually work up to that. You have to work up to those higher intensities.
Of course, most people listening might think, why would anybody want that? You know, it always comes back to that question, right?
It's interesting because you mentioned at the topic at the beginning, you know, what is role play, what is lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's a nice example of a kind of a role play. The flogger, when it's well done, will not harm the person receiving the flogging. They may have a red bomb, they may have, you know, a kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's designed so it's to make a play, to like and a teeter, if you want, to create a situation. And in this case, the role play would really well describe what's happening. Because, you know, it's a slave or a prisoner, or you can
mm-hmm.
do whatever play you feel like with this, you know.
Okay, so you would create a whole kind of a scene around
it? Yeah, scenario around this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, the pleasure comes from different... It can come from different things in terms of flogging. A lot of people get off on pain. And, you know, some of the listeners, maybe if you've played around and you've had somebody, you know, bite or twist one of your nipples a little bit, mm-hmm. and that feels good, that's the sort of thing that we're seeking when we're getting flogged. We're seeking that level of pain that transfers into pleasure. And it also is a form of power exchange, right? A lot of us are getting off on having another person exert power and exert control over us. And the act of literally being hit by somebody else, it's a form of them enacting power on you, and it can be really, really, really intimate. I've had some very intimate experiences being flogged.
What are some of the questions you get from people who don't quite understand what's going on? Like, do people question you on that?
I mean, aside from the just why are you interested in this, mm-hmm. most of the people that I interact with are already in these spaces.
Okay.
So they have some understanding of pain. I mean, I do have some people who haven't seen it before who have safety concerns with flogging. You know, it doesn't seem safe to be hitting somebody mm-hmm. that hard on their body. And most BDSM play spaces, most BDSM communities emphasize some sort of education before you're engaging in this sort of play. And with flogging, that's definitely the case. When you're flogging, you're always flogging on, you know, meatier areas of a person's body, you know, the shoulder, the top of the back, always avoiding the spine or the butt cheeks, where you're hitting really just the flesh, but not any internal organs, not any of the more fragile bones.
Safety. Well, the kidneys are what really a lot of people don't realize where your mm-hmm. kidneys are, and they'll still think they're hitting the bum. For the bum, it's usually like the sit part of your bum, if that makes
right,
any
the
sense.
Bones, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. that's where is the safest to hit, is the sit part.
So, I mean, safety obviously is a concern. It's something that we talk about. You know, people can't just go out and buy, oh, there's a nice flogger, I'll just buy that and start on that.
We have some rubber floggers, which are actually for very heavy play.
What does that mean, heavy play? Like
it's a much more extreme play. It's much, because it's heavy rubber falls on it that are maybe like as thick as your baby finger. It takes very, very little effort to just lightly hit somebody with that and
ouch.
It's mm-hmm. it's like it gives a lot of bang for the buck, and it really can hurt a lot. It's whereas we have quite a few floggers, and you know, the leather ones that are more like a mop are as Dane's saying, they're because it's spread out. But you have to you know, if you're going out and buying a flogger, you know, you do have to be aware that the different media that it's made from can make a big difference to the how extreme that toy is.
We're talking BDSM tonight on our alternative sexuality night. So if you have any questions or concerns, or, you know, these people here, Dane Stewart, Pierre and Catherine of BDSM Circle, are all very open to discussing and answering your questions, whatever those questions are. And it's okay. If you're confused about some of the stuff we're talking about or want to know a bit more, then, of course, you're always welcome to connect with us at 514-800 to text in. So coming up, I do want to talk about role-playing. And, it's something people hear a lot about in terms of, a lot of people role-play. They pretend to be someone else. But this is especially prevalent in, in the BDSM community. But what is it to role-play, and what is it to live your life as a BDSM practitioner, I guess? Or are you just a practitioner or a lifestyler? So those are some of the issues we'll discuss, and anything else you want to bring up.
Your relationship's on the line. Connect with Dr. Lori now, 514-790-0800. Passion. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Tonight on the program, our BDSM panel, we've got Dane Stewart, who manages Montreal's local pup group, Woof MTL. He also organizes monthly events for human pups and BDSM play nights at a local dungeon. Somebody says, and we also have Pierre and Catherine, of course, of BDSMCircle.com. This may be a great way to beat the heat. I don't know. That sounds to me like it would be
actually,
very hot.
Actually, when you try to have a scene and it's hot like this, often the flogger will stick on the skin.
Right. And not good.
No.
Okay. So the heat is not good for this kind of thing.
And there's certain plays that you can't just do in this that aren't safe to do in this heat, like a, let's say, a saran wrap or things like that, mm-hmm. with organ spinning. You don't do them in this weather. It's right. not safe.
So if you're going to play in any dungeon, you have to make sure it's well air conditioned, is really what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
All right. Let's see. All those devices, this texter writes, are used for other play aside from flogging. They're pretty versatile. So all those things, what else are they used for?
Well, there's different type of flogger,
mm-hmm.
Different type of whips, paddles, that's for percussion play. You have all the bondage equipment you can have, shackles, chains, ropes.
Spreader bars.
But they can all be used, I think what this texter was saying, is that all those things.
Oh, the equipment?
The equipment can be used for many different things.
Yeah, for bondage and all sorts of different plays, sure.
Right.
But the question was specifically on flogging, right?
So. No, just that all those devices are used for other play aside from flogging. So they
right,
can be used
course.
For all those other things. Right.
Well, some type of flogger you can are used for insertion if you have the right handle on it. I would let your imagination go on this one.
Okay.
Thanks, there's
Pierre.
Often you can buy stuff that is made for different type of play. So it basically it's your imagination that.
But like on a cross, you could do wax play, for instance. You could do a violet wand. You could do insertion play. You could do heat play. You could do cold play. You could do, basically anything that you can do standing up.
Right.
Right.
All right. Anything you want to add to that, Dave?
Yeah, well, I mean, all this equipment's so versatile, the spanking bench as well, like, it's obviously can be used for spanking.
Yes.
You can tie somebody down to it, but then also, I also don't want to give off the impression that, you know, you need this type of equipment to engage in that kind of play, too.
Right.
You can create bondage scenarios, you know, on any kind of household equipment as well, on bedposts, on a
Remember
chair.
That one of the goal of a dungeon is to create an environment, a story, if you
ambience.
Want. An ambience. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And often, I mean, for us, our dungeon it's a bedroom. It's a bedroom that we change. But it's a damn bedroom, mm-hmm. you know? But people go
damn
in.
Damn it, it's a dungeon.
It's Pierre's bedroom. It's your dungeon, clearly.
But people go in, they see all the stuff hanging from the walls, the device we have there, and it creates something in their head. And this is, you know, that mind play is mm-hmm. really important. And we try to create actually an atmosphere using this, you know. When you're in the dungeon, you have to act a certain way because this is asked of you if, you know, you're our sub
some
or
protocols.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
Protocols. And, of course, it's easy to play when you have the right equipment.
Right.
But, yes, we can play in your bedroom. You can
do this anywhere, really.
Someone.
I think that's what Dane was saying. You can. You don't need equipment
It creates something a little more, you know.
Right. More fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
Texter writes, I'm curious about this. I'm a person who is in control of pretty much all I do at home and at work. However, I'm really curious about being dominated where I'm not in control anymore. Not sure about spanking or water sports. It's more about being told what to do. Being sissified. You'll have to explain that. How does one go about getting involved in this? How should I approach this?
Yeah, well,
as
I mean,
a sub,
like,
Dane,
you just largely described me. I'm a very busy person. I like to have control over most aspects of my life, and I work really hard and I get a lot of things done. When I'm a sub, I want somebody else to make all of those decisions
right.
for me, to give me the orders, to boss me around. So, I mean, and I think there are a lot of subs who are in that position. It's not exclusively type A people.
Mm-hmm. But I know Catherine sees a lot of type A
yes.
people who come to see her.
And part of my kink, personally, is being an authority.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so there's many, many subs who do not want any S&M. That's what everybody talks about. They may like bondage, but I bet you half of people who are submissive don't want to do any S&M. They may do some bondage. It's the authority. They want to be told what to do. They want to be told, you know, it might even go as far as is when to exercise, how to dress, when to get up in the morning, mm-hmm. all sorts of things. And this is when it goes into more of a lifestyle.
Right.
Right. Or they might just want for an afternoon where they're being told to do things. And for many, many kind of type A or people who are typically in an authoritarian position, mm-hmm. be it just even that they're, you know, they're parents. So they're always in charge of their kids or in charge of that. It doesn't
have to be the household and whatever.
That, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they just want to not have to make any decisions, not have to take responsibility for any decisions. So like, for instance, with the sub with me, if you say, if you do what I tell you, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so.
What's the word that this texter used? Sissified.
Oh, sissify. All right. Okay. That is when basically you are taking a male and you are dressing him as a female.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now there is a whole, there's all sorts of different like genres or subsections in this, okay? When because a lot of people who aren't in gay or in the BDSM lifestyle or whatever, it's just, oh, it's just a man in a dress.
Mm-hmm.
But sissifying specifically is a specific type of dressing as a woman. And it's often...
forced.
Yeah, yes. Well, there's forced sissification.
Okay, so where you're telling them you must wear a dress.
That's right.
Okay.
And there's others that are like, oh, please put me in a dress.
Okay.
That's not the force. But sissification is more like, I'm trying to think, we had a Sabin who was...
But she was a transvestite.
Well, but she liked to be sissified. So it's often very pink or almost like anime-type clothes.
Mm-hmm. Exaggerated female clothing.
Yes, exaggerated female clothing. And it has nothing to do with children, but almost like a little girl look often with the sissification.
Right.
And if you think of, now I'm going to have sissies that are mad at me when I say this, but if you think of your old auntie who dressed so fussy, that's often
dowdy.
The way. So they'll have like the white gloves,
oh, okay.
Or they'll have the
chiffon,
or the hats that are like, okay. Really, my
looking
old
like
aunt
the,
might
looking
have worn
like
it.
The queen or something.
Yes,
I
yes,
get you.
Exactly. Okay.
Makeup
so,
is important.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you did bring up a really good point, Pierre, about the genders to which this occurs. You know, it's not just always about men being forced to dress as women, but it can be about women, you know, performing a heightened version of femininity, or about people okay. who don't identify as either a man or a woman, somewhere in between or non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
I can also, you know, get pleasure from that. So it's not exclusively men to women, but it's, yeah, it's that emasculation. It's a lot of people get off
right,
on
that emasculation. Yeah. So, and this is a good question. How does one go about getting involved in this? Like, this sounds like someone who's recently discovered this about themselves or is starting to explore this. How does a person go about approaching this?
They can hire a professional by the
mm-hmm.
hour.
Mm-hmm.
Often some professionals are going to have a specialty about this, you know. They're going to have a huge wardrobe for different size of men and different type of outfit. Or they can go and add section and specialize website and try to find a partner.
So they would look for a dominant partner. They would
exactly.
look for that. How,
exactly.
Dane, how would you?
Well, I'd say, I think I'd start off by saying that BDSM, it's your journey. You get to decide what it means for you. I think we are fed a lot of representations of what BDSM is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this texter specifically noted, like, I'm interested in this, but I don't want to get flogged. I don't want to get, you know, whatever. And you don't have to. You don't have to, you know, sign your life away on a contract to do any sort of play. You can figure out what works for you and you know, grow off of that. And one of the brilliant things about the moment that we're in right now is that every kink that you can think of has a giant community surrounding it online.
Mm-hmm.
You can find people who have common interests, whether it's on Facebook, on Tumblr, on FetLife, Recon, Grindr.
Yeah.
You can find the people there and you can start the conversations and figure out what works for
Actually,
you.
Actually, FetLife is probably a good place
FetLife,
to start, right?
For sure.
What about going to some of these organized parties?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, there's lots of things offered in Montreal specifically. We have WoofMTL, our group that does a lot of pup play, but we also do, you know, some education. There's a couple other groups, the Phoenix of Montreal. They're a leather group, Weekend Fusion in Montreal. And they offer, you know, sometimes weekend workshops where mm-hmm. you can go in and do a class. It's really low pressure. It sounds a little stressful to go to a class on fisting or flogging or something, but they're really low pressure and like really nice, friendly environments where you can meet people with common interests and, you know, get the basic education and start to, you know, meet people you might actually want to play with in the community.
All right. Anybody want to add to that? Our wonderful BDSM panel tonight. If you have questions, we will answer. This text was, how do you know when it's legit? So you mean...
That's in general. That's too general for a question.
Right. Well, do you know what they might mean?
I mean, legit in... I think especially when we're encountering people online, there can be some worry about, you know, safety. When I was first getting involved in the scene, and I still sometimes do this rule, you know, just meet people in person first. I think that's a quite important thing to do, especially if you don't have that much experience. Meet somebody, have a beer, have a coffee, talk about what you're interested in experiencing and see if they're interested in it as well. Because a lot of people assume that as a dom meeting a sub, you're going to connect, but it's not
sadly,
necessary.
Sadly, so. A place like FetLife or Facebook, there's a lot of wannabes that when you want to meet them, you go there and they don't show up.
I think that's what this person is concerned about, actually. We'll continue that, but, you know, like as he says, you say go online, but how do you know and trust? So it's sometimes hard to trust what you're seeing online. And that's the same for just about everybody. But this is a great conversation to keep having, like, where do we go if somebody is interested in that?
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
From the pleasure to the pain and everything in between. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Tonight it is our alternative sexuality panel. We've got Dane Stewart, who is... actually won the Pup Montreal contest in 2016. He also manages a Montreal local pup group. So if you want to know about pup play, human pups at Woof MTL, but he also organizes BDSM play nights in dungeons. We have Pierre and Catherine of BDSMCircle.com. They are that's the go-to site in my books that has is chock full of information. Everything. You talk about everything on that site. There's like 1,000 pages. Crazy. So if you have questions tonight, 514-800 to text in. We've had some great questions, actually. Tickle torture, somebody wrote. Tickle torture. Who likes tickle torture? To me, it would be torture to be tickled. Like, it would not be pleasant to... That torture is the right word.
And for some people, it's a fetish.
They love it.
It's
arousing sexually.
Yep. And it's strange. It seems to be an original thing. Of course, we know people that are into tickling, but it's not like, it seems to be like different place. There's more than other places. It's kind of weird, but yeah, it's one of the fetish.
Yeah, I'm violently ticklish.
okay, do you like it?
Well, I have had doms who have punished me by tying me down so I can't move and tickling me. And I don't get off on the act of being tickled, but the act of being controlled like that and being subjected to the will of somebody else.
Right.
Yeah, that can get me off for sure. But tickling, like, if you heard it sounds like, I don't know, it's terrifying.
I don't like to. Actually, I would find that torturous.
Many things in BDSM is the, you know, being forced to do X or Y. And it's extremely important for a lot of people. Many people don't enjoy S&M, for instance. But if you put them on a cross and you use a light flogger, they will hate the play itself, but they would love the situation.
They like being forced. There's a lot of plays in BDSM too that, while it's happening, might not be entirely pleasant, but afterwards, when they think about it, it's hot as hell.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then someone else wants to know what's cold play?
Oh,
ice.
That's like, we, for instance, have like a chainmail flogger with like metal falls on it, mm-hmm. or metal tails, And we keep that in the freezer.
Okay.
So, and then we have things that are different temperatures. So that's it's playing temperature play. So think of on a hot day like this, someone comes with a metal flogger that's like, you know, nice been in cold. The freezer mm-hmm. and they put it on the small of your back or wherever.
Okay.
Or ice cube or...
Mm-hmm. Ice cubes.
There's a lot of things you can use.
It's a type of sensation play.
Right, it's sensation play. Someone should come up with a state-of-the-art red room like 50 Shades of Grey for people to rent for the evening.
Actually,
they must exist, no?
Well,
I'm sorry, but if I was the billionaire like that fella, I'd have one hell of a better dungeon. I was actually quite disappointed in the dungeon.
Really?
Yes, it was... A passable dungeon, but if
it
come
was
on,
pretty
Dane, if you had an unlimited budget, if you were a billionaire, you would have had a whole bloody better dungeon than that.
My
come
whole
on.
House would be a dungeon.
Well, yeah, it'd be better than that.
I think it's fun for people in Montreal who are not familiar with the community to think about how there are dungeons everywhere.
Are you serious?
Sure, well, I mean, there are a lot of them. Like most neighborhoods have a dungeon located somewhere.
Really?
So you like sure. a place that you just walk by every day, like. There might be a dungeon hidden.
Well, that's like Pierre and Catherine's house.
Yeah, unassuming, they have a dungeon in our
unassuming
house.
You know, they have a dungeon in their house.
Exactly.
But then how do people like our texter who is looking for information about this, how do you find those dungeons?
You go to Munches. You make
Munches.
Friends. You go on internet.
So it's a question of making friends with people within the community.
If you have something to, yes. let's say, like this to rent, you have to do publicity about it. You have to make it known, you know, through whatever.
Well, sometimes word of mouth within the community, I imagine.
Yes. Yes, but the thing is, a lot of people try to make money out of this, and after a year or so, they stop because it's quite yeah. expensive to maintain a dungeon like this.
Yeah, but the internet is your best friend in this scenario. The internet is, it makes it all so easy. Go on FetLife, talk to people who have similar interests to you, meet up with them in person, in public first, and they'll show you
the
where
ropes.
The parties are at.
Okay.
They'll show you the ropes, metaphorically and literally.
That's right,
Or join one of those Facebook groups that I mentioned before, WoofMTL, our group. You can join the Phoenix of Montreal. They're a leather club. The Weekend Fusion, which is part of Pride this year. It's part of Le Fierté Fétiche,
mm-hmm.
the first weekend of Fierté Montréal this year. There will be classes on the fetish lifestyle. That's a month from now. So
okay, yeah. great. So learn more... And the key is learn, like go and educate yourself first and then, you know, then do the.
Well, educate yourself and meet people, right?
And meet like, people.
You've
yeah.
got to
just
meet
talk,
people in the community because
right.
we do publicize our events, but we've got to keep a curtain of privacy over what we're doing, right? Like we.
Right. You're not giving the address out publicly on the radio is what
Precisely.
You're saying.
Yeah.
right. Absolutely. So when do you guys used to organize munches or meetings where people can just talk who are like-minded?
Yes, we did. And then...
There's a few that you can just go to FetLife and there's some that are
they're
going
all
on
there.
And
okay.
stuff. Yeah.
And they're like meetup groups,
yes.
basically.
In our case, it's just that life got into the way, you know.
We're busy. You're too busy working
yeah.
and all the rest of the stuff and taking a break.
Well, and, you know, we actually want to have time to actually play with subs and not just talk about it. No offense.
Right.
So... You know, on
I hear you
on a Saturday. Would I rather be, you know, in the dungeon with the sub or with the bunch
or
of people
talking
about it,
right?
So,
well, at some point you got to pick. So, if we talk about somebody who is a lifestyler or a BDSMer versus somebody who simply engages in BDSM occasionally, what would be the difference?
Dane gave a wonderful example about this. If he was a billionaire, his whole house would be a dungeon.
That's a lifestyle.
That's a lifestyle. But some people, they would have a chest somewhere that is locked with some toys in it, and they open it from time to time, and they just play with their partner, you know, once in a blue moon.
Mm-hmm.
That's a play. So it's
that's more role play.
That's role play.
Right.
So you can see the difference in between. Most people are in the middle in between. Like for us, there's things that we do that are basically considered role play. But we have to live with the dungeon. We have to live that we're checking on our sub all the time. So that makes it more like a lifestyle. You know?
Catherine?
Well, it's also how whether or not you integrate it into your everyday-to-day life. Okay? So some submissives and doms like the ongoing play. I do, for instance,
mm-hmm.
right? Where I might put a sub on a fitness routine. Mm-hmm. So it's every day they're doing this.
Or so you're like a coach now. You're a trainer
well,
now.
Yeah, a coach. Sometimes it's to quit smoking. It's usually like self-improvement things. It could be to get fit, to, you know, it could be something as, you know, stop getting speeding tickets.
So that's not really connected to sexual arousal, though.
Well, yeah, it is.
Truly it is. Okay. It's like dangerous.
Because
described.
It's the authority that they're getting off on, too.
No, for you.
Oh,
for you
I get
as
off
the dominant.
What to do.
Okay.
Right?
So that's arousal.
I won't necessarily have an orgasm from telling them to do something in particular, you know.
Right.
You know.
But if they're good and we invite them in our dungeon, usually we reward them at this point, which could be anything that you can think of.
Yes. But or you may punish them if they're not doing it. I've done where, and damn it, I really wanted to play, but sub got there and they're bad, so the worst thing I can do is send them back home.
Mm-hmm. They come
really?
Home, they that... help us do the cleaning and everything, and then it's like, thank you, you go home.
Mm-hmm.
No reward, and trust me, that works well.
Well, yeah, and also I think it's important to note for people who are more lifestylers that at a certain point it moves beyond the sexual pleasure of it as well. You're getting other types of other benefits from that.
It's a,
you know,
it's a type of a partnership or symbiotic.
Yeah, like there's a love, there's an intimacy, there's sure. an affection that's not necessarily tied to sexuality all the
right,
time.
Right.
And like I said before, you know, BDSM, it's your journey. You get to decide what you want to do with it. If you want to play as a submissive only in private with one specific partner, great. For me as a pup, my pup relationships with dominance, we call them handlers or sirs or trainers, they've sort of been 24/7 relationships, and there have been elements of the pup handler dynamic throughout that. I'm not always on all fours barking and wearing a leash.
How else can you do your job then, right?
Well, then you should take that leash and call her off, Dane.
No.
But like I did when I in my relationship with my previous sir, you know, I wore my collar 24/7. I didn't take it off for a year and a half. I had this
so
big
that
heavy...
would be a lifestyle kind of thing.
But then also, you know, like I said, I'm not always barking. I go to work. I go work a professional job every day. But we
and most people do, right? Let's be real. Most people in any of these lifestyles
yeah.
have normal, you know, normal have regular jobs.
And most of our relationship was normal relationship stuff. You know, having dinner, watching Netflix, and cuddling. But we had these little protocols, little types of play that distinguish it as a pup handler relationship.
Great. We've got some great questions coming up, especially one about how come it doesn't revolve around sex for BDSM and some other questions about being in love with and escort services and stuff like that. So we'll address those coming up.
Straight talk that's all inclusive. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Tonight we have our BDSM night, or alternative sexuality night, with Pierre and Catherine of BDSM Circle and Dane Stewart of Woof MTL. He also organizes play nights in BDSM play nights in local dungeons. So you can go to that's the Facebook page, right? Woof MTL.
Woof MTL is the page.
It's the Facebook page.
Yep.
And you can connect with other people who, you know, have similar interests. So this question came in. I just befriended a young lady that is in the escort service, and she engages totally in BDSM. Is it wrong of me that I might be in love with this young lady but not her fetish? So beware of being in love with escorts, because oftentimes, especially if you use a particular escort, their job is to make you like them so that you can keep going to them and keep getting paid. That's number one.
It's her job.
It's her job, exactly. The fact that she's into this is what she does exclusively and this is not what you like, you're not a match. Let's say she wasn't. Let's say she wasn't an escort, and this was her thing, and this was not your thing. You would not be compatible sexually, especially if you wouldn't be open to practicing or giving her what she needs.
Through the years we've been on your show, this is something we put a lot of emphasis. You know, you have to be compatible with the partner. You have to talk about things. You have to negotiate a lot to know exactly what both you want. And we mention that if one of the partner is not into BDSM, you're already starting in a really bad way.
Right. Unless, you know, I've spoken to couples who are exploring, let's say one partner isn't so into it, but one partner is really finding it exciting. So the partner who's not so into it is fine to engage in some role play, you know, is to, okay, I'll do this for you. This is role play. But someone who exclusively engages, as this person says, totally in BDSM, that's very different. That's somebody whose lifestyle is more around that.
Exactly.
Well, I don't think it's wrong to be in love, but I think it's going to be heartbreak.
Right. That sounds about right. Yeah. How come, this text writes, BDSM doesn't really revolve around sex? From what I understand, it doesn't end with penetration. Why is that?
Well, let's start off deconstructing what we think sex is, right? Sex means different things to different people.
That's true, too.
For a lot of people, sex is, penetration. But for a lot of people, they find sexual pleasure in other ways and they don't like penetration at all. And that's still sex, and that constitutes that for that person.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of people, I mean, we get off on so many different things. There's a really great quote by Eve Sedgwick, who's a queer theorist, who talks about the term sexual orientation. We talk about sexual orientation as being what gender you're attracted to,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much more to sex. You know, what type of activities you're interested in, the frequency of activity that you're interested in, the number of partners that you're interested in having. And for some reason, society has boiled it all down to the gender of attraction. That's the most important thing.
Right. When in fact, a lot of people who are practitioners of BDSM consider this a kind of an orientation,
mm-hmm.
right?
I do.
They're oriented towards that.
But there's more to this. I can talk about what we call the naughty part of it. A man who wants to dress like a woman, there's nothing sexual about this. But because it's, let's say, unusual,
taboo,
well, it becomes sexual.
Mm-hmm.
But if tomorrow the society would to wake up and say anybody can dress the way they want, it will no longer be sexual or taboo or whatever you want to call it.
It's the taboo part that's the arousing part, is
exactly
what you're saying.
But there's also a section of BDSMers who don't think it's sexual at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of them, but that's what it's like, a separate thing I enjoy. It's an authoritarian thing, or it's a release, and don't find it sexual, because I find that fascinating myself. And I've spoken at length to several people over the years, or a few people over the years, who feel that way, because
that it's not sexual
but
at all.
Yes, there are people who they're married. They wouldn't do anything sexual, so it's flogging, it's bondage, it's whatever. They'll have a partner, and they don't do anything that your average person would consider sexual. So there's no caressing, there's no kissing, there's no penetration, there's no anything like that. It's very
specific to the
task at hand, and that's it.
There's a lot of video on the internet where BDSM is, or the S&M is sexual, but there's a lot of video where it's simply and only about S&M. There's no pleasure to the submissive or the dominant. What you see is basically what some would call torture, which in this case is not, because
it's consensual.
Consensual, you know, but somebody wants pain and somebody else is giving them.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I just reiterate the fact that, you know, penetrative sex is not the only kind of sex. There's also, I like to consider the fact there are people for whom penetrative sex isn't really an option. You know, I know a lot of gay men who don't engage in anal sex because it can hurt a lot if you don't understand how to do it, or if your body isn't built that
or
way.
Or if you don't like it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who don't enjoy that, and they still have sex. It's just not... That's not the way that they express it.
Or maybe we can phrase it another way, is that it's arousing, but not sexually arousing. Is it possible that some people it's not sexually arousing?
But there's also, for instance, I don't have intercourse with my subs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that, but we're certainly sexual. I mean, there's oral sex, there's lots of other ways.
But you draw the line at intercourse.
Yeah,
it's your own line.
And I don't want to.
Right. So everyone has their, again, boundaries, like in any.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you talk about these limits ahead of time, I would imagine.
This is called a negotiation.
Well, yes, and I'm also in control, so nobody's going to do that to me unless I'm there and wanting them to.
That's
right?
Quite true. So can you talk about the negotiation that goes on, like before? Does it happen before every encounter? Does it happen just with new people?
It depends. Now we're talking about different type of relationship. A long-term relationship, the negotiation is always ongoing. Or you can go to a night and find a partner for that night and say, okay, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, let's go.
Let's get a safe word, okay, let's go.
You know? Mm-hmm. So everything is possible there. For us, we're kind of old school. For us, it's the negotiation must always be happening. We push a lot the fact that you play with the same partner for a long time. But like I said, we're old school.
I've also been in a situation where, let's say you're at a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Another femdom will want me to play with them with their sub. Okay.
Two dominatrix.
Yeah, double doming.
Okay.
So there's double two. Doming. It's called okay. double doming.
Okay.
And so there'll be two femdoms usually at a sub or a few subs, right? But basically it's someone else's sub. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in this situation, because I will pass even if I want to, if I haven't negotiated. However, there's times when I'll speak to the dom and I'll basically follow her lead. So if she's doing something, whatever, or I'll motion, if I want to do something, I'll catch her attention because
Right.
They can't see and we'll do that. But other than that, there's
always negotiation.
Yes.
Dane, you've experienced the same?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially if you're new to the scene, new to the community, I really recommend having a transparent negotiation with somebody before you play.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's ideal to do this in a scenario like not where you're going to play immediately.
Exactly.
So if you meet up, like I said, for a beer, for a coffee, and you have the conversation in a non-sexual atmosphere,
right.
Because sometimes when you are sexually charged, you're going to have the impulse to agree to things that you wouldn't normally agree to.
That's a good point.
He's got a good point. One of the things I say on the website is if you're negotiating with someone and you're aroused, stop, go take a cold shower before you continue to negotiate because you need to have all of your head.
So don't drink either.
Well, yeah. I mean, I like to think that you're going to have one or two beers and be fine, but that's my own tolerance to alcohol.
Right.
There are lots of people who will argue that any alcohol consumption will impair your ability to consent or
right.
negotiate.
Or to judge or to do things that you might not normally do in a sober state or make decisions.
But when people are horny, they're going to say yes to a lot of things that they normally wouldn't.
It's true. And this is why... If you're negotiating with someone...
Don't negotiate while you're horny.
Don't negotiate while you're horny. Go take that cold shower or go do a...
Unfortunately, you get a whole section of subs who will kind of just want the sub or the dom to be able to read their minds.
Mm.
And they don't want to negotiate. No, anything is fine. It's like, no, anything is not fine.
Right.
I promise you within 5 minutes I could do things that you're not liking.
Comfortable.
You know. So... Everybody has their own thing, and they'll think that other people, I think I'm like all subs, or they'll think they're totally unique when they're not. And you really need to know specific because there's triggers, there's things, and even if you've negotiated, there's got to be that safe word or the signal or whatever. Sometimes they can just say, no, I don't like this, if depending on the role play. But there has to be. That has to be in there.
There's always a situation that can happen that you haven't negotiated, but you have to take a decision. So this is why you have to always be talking. If something happened and you're not aware or you're kind of worried, you stop the play and you deal with this situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Any last words staying on that?
Yeah, I'd say also, again, if you're new to this, if you're just getting out and exploring, it's also important in your negotiation to note the experience level that you have with a certain type of play, because you might fantasize about something in your head and really want to experience that, and the act of actually experiencing it can be much more intense and much more traumatic than you imagined in your head. So I think that's a really important thing to bring into the negotiation, is the experience that you have in that kind of play. And then also I'd say the negotiation continues after the scene. It's really good and really important to check in with the person who you played with and say...
So debrief.
Yeah, this
worked,
this didn't work.
There should be a debrief.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's all great advice, especially if you're venturing out in this in this new world. I want to thank you all so much for being here. Dane Stewart can be found at Woof MTL on Facebook, Pierre and Catherine at BDSMCircle.com. We'll catch up with you again next month, the first Wednesday of every month here on Passion. Thank you so much for spending your time with us and your text. Great, great text tonight. Thanks to Dave Simon, our technical producer. You can connect with me on social media at Dr. Lori Batito or through my website, drlori.com. Coming up next on CJAD, the CTV National News. Have a great rest of the evening and remember to live your life with passion.